the pout-lipped one said, considering me. The other two girls tittered. That stung. The Tailor Abdul was a story about a man who was too picky with his wives. He married his first wife because her face was so lovely. He married his second because her body was desirable, and the third because she had such a good heart. But he bemoaned that his first wife was cruel, that his second wife had an unsightly face, and that his third wife had an ugly body. And so he hired the Tailor Abdul to make him the perfect wife. The skilled tailor did as he was told without objection. He sewed the first wife's head onto the body of the second wife, and then he sewed the good heart of the third wife into the body so neatly that he didn't even scar her perfect chest. What was left of the women was tossed out into the desert. In the end, the wives got their revenge, as the husband was eaten alive by a skinwalker who wore all the discarded pieces of his wives. I stopped my hand from drifting to the marks on my arms. I was a Demji, a soldier of the rebellion, the blue-eyed bandit. I'd faced a whole lot worse than bratty harem girls. But Kadir only smiled. In that case, she was tailored for me. It looks more like he made her for the menagerie, another girl started, failing to read her Sultim's mood. Or he mixed her arms up with a monkey's. The girls' titters burst into laughter, but they had lost the Sultim's attention. He pushed himself to his feet, almost spilling the girl in his lap off him. You look miraging. The spark of interest in his voice was dangerous as he closed the short distance between us. It is so rare they're able to bring me miraging girls. Your kind are my favorites, though. Your Western miraging, I suppose. I didn't answer. He didn't seem to need me to. He grabbed my chin, tilting my face to catch the light, and looking me over like a merchant might look at a horse. I would have hit him, but the Sultan's orders kept my hands at my sides. At least my brother's rebellion is good for something. Wars mean more prisoners. It had long been known that the harem was a dangerous place to be. I'd heard in the days of Sultan Oman's father, some women did come to him by choice, but more were prisoners of war, slaves bought from foreign shores, women captured off ships like Jin's mother. Now we had a war in Miraji. That would mean more slavers taking advantage of the chaos to take Mirajin women. Has the blessed Sultima even seen you yet? The girl who'd been displaced from her Sultim's lap called out, trying to regain his attention. All the new girls for the Sultim are meant to be seen by the Sultima. The petite cohort agreed, like she was parroting something someone else had said. Yes, she needs to deem you worthy. The girl who'd been at his feet butted in too, eager to please. Or not worthy, the pout-lipped girl smirked. Be quiet, Ayet. There's no need to disturb the Sultima. The Sultim's hand left my face, traveling down my neck, across my collarbone, making my skin crawl. She's off limits. The servant with me spoke up just as Kadir's hand reached the border of the white linen sheet that covered me. She had the clipped, matronly tone of a mother without much patience. The Sultim opened his mouth with a dismissal that never came as she cut across him. Your father's orders. Mention of the Sultan drew Kadir's hand up short. For a second, he seemed to blaze with defiance, and then it was gone, covered as he dropped his arm and shrugged, brushing past me instead, like that was what he'd intended to do all along. His wives gathered themselves up, following him. Ayat's eyes dropped to Shahzad's discarded khalat as she passed. So fine a few days ago at the wedding, before we were attacked, before I was kissed and kidnapped and cut into, but still beautiful. Her left foot caught the fabric, flicking it and sending it flying into one of the pools, soaking the fabric through.
Oops.
Ayat flashed me her teeth.
Sorry.
She flicked one last droplet off her hair at me as she left, followed by a burst of giggles and whispers that bounced off the walls of the baths. I felt the back of my neck go hot. When Ahmed took this palace, I was going to burn the harem to the ground. Chapter 17. The harem stripped me of the desert. The attendants dumped water over my head and scrubbed at my skin until it was screaming and raw, until they'd robbed me of the skin that had been caked with sand and blood and sweat and gunpowder and fire and Jin's hands. They pulled me out of the steaming water. I let one of the girls wrap me in a big, dry linen sheet and lay me down gently next to the bath. Something warm dripped across my skin, like oil. It smelled of flowers I didn't know. The other girl ran a comb through my hair, scraping gently at my scalp. I'd spent my whole life fighting to stay alive in Dustwalk as a girl with the gun, fighting to escape death in that dead-end desert town, fighting to get across the desert. The blue-eyed bandit. Fighting for Ahmed, for the rebellion. A new dawn, a new desert. But as the comb scraped through my hair over and over again, I wasn't sure I had any fight left in me. I let sleep claim me. Tomorrow. I'd fight tomorrow. It didn't take a whole lot of time for me to figure out that the harem was full of invisible chains and walls meant to look like they weren't there. It felt like a maze designed to turn me around over and over until I wasn't sure how I'd come in or if there was a way out anymore. There were dozens of gardens which fit together like honeycombs. Some of them were plain stretches of grass with a single fountain gushing endless water and pillows scattered throughout. Others were so thick with flowers and vines and sculptures, I couldn't even see the walls anymore. But the walls were always there. I couldn't count how many folk lived in the harem. Dozens of wives belonging to the sultan and the sultim alike. And children, too. The princes and princesses born to the sultan's wives. All of them younger than 16. The age they were finally released from the harem. To pass from their father's hands to their husbands, or to die for him on the battlefield like Naguib had. All of them, Ahmed and Jin's brothers and sisters. Finally, I found one of the borders, a gate crafted out of iron and gold that stood ajar. My legs stumbled to a stop as I tried to pass through. I fought against the feeling holding me back, but it was no good. My body seized like I'd been grabbed by some invisible hand. My blood turned to stone, and a fist twisted in my gut, pulling me back. I'd been ordered not to leave. I couldn't go any further. I needed to get word back to the rebellion, even if I didn't know exactly where the rebellion was. Shahzad's family was in his mom, though, and his mom was on the other side of these walls, a few feet away. It might as well have been a whole desert between us. There had to be a crack, some way out of the harem. Even if I couldn't get out, there had to be some way to get out a warning, at least, that the Sultan had a genie, that he had my father. I pushed that thought away. He wasn't my father any more than my mother's husband had been. If he were my father, he would have cared if I died or not. My mother had raised me on 1,000 stories of girls who were saved by the gene, princesses rescued from towers, peasant girls rescued from poverty. Turned out, stories were just stories. I was on my own. It ought to be a familiar feeling. I used to think I was on my own in Dust Walk, too. But that had never been true. I'd had Tamid back then. Now there were dozens of tiny incisions healing all over my body, reminding me why I couldn't trust my oldest friend. My fingers found one of the tiny pieces of metal under the skin of my arm. It hurt when I pressed my thumb against it. I pushed harder. For the first time in my life, I really was alone. It was on my third day in the harem that I stumbled into the menagerie. The noise was the first thing I noticed, a riot of different screams coming from iron cages crowned in intricate latticework domes. There were hundreds of birds perched among the iron bars, dressed in colors to make a genie jealous, the yellow of fresh lemons, green like the grass in the Dev's Valley before we fled, red like the Shima I'd lost, blue like my eyes, only not quite. Nothing was really the same blue as my eyes, except for Noorsham's and Bahadur's, the ones that had watched, burning low with indifference as the knife inched towards my skin, the ones that hadn't even blinked or deigned to turn away, like watching me wouldn't cause him any pain. I turned away from the birds. Huge peacocks fanned their tails as I passed another cage. In another, a pair of tigers lounged in a patch of sunlight, sprawled across each other, yawning wide enough so I could see teeth the length of my fingers. There had been some painted on the walls of the secret door leading into the rebel camp, too. But those were pictures, 1,000 years old, the size of my hand. These were far from that. I stumbled to a stop at the furthest cage. The thing inside was nearly as big as a rock. A solid behemoth of gray skin and thick limbs and unnaturally large ears. I caught my body pressed up against the bars, like I might be able to squeeze through and touch it. On the opposite side of the cage was a girl, sitting with her knees drawn up to her chin. She couldn't be more than 15. Too young to be one of the Sultim's wives. She had to be the Sultan's daughter then. One of his brood of princesses who were never spoken about half so much as the princes. Something about her reminded me of Delilah, even though I realized she'd share blood with Jin, which Delilah didn't. But still, there was a softness in the curve of her cheeks, like she hadn't fully finished unsticking herself from childhood yet, either. And she was handling something that looked like a toy she was modeling out of red clay around a metal skeleton, making a tiny model of the beast. She nudged one of the legs as I watched. It bent naturally, guided by small metallic joints inside. "What is it?" I asked. She looked up, startled out of her work, staring at me through the bars of the cage. The words had slipped out without meaning to. "An elephant?" she said quietly. My heart twisted painfully as I thought of Iz and Maz excitedly explaining elephants to me. This was what they had seen across our borders. A real live elephant. "Come to visit your family?" The sneering voice behind me was far from welcome. I turned to meet it all the same. It was Ayet, the wife who'd kicked my Kalat into the pool my first day in the harem. With her were the two other girls who always seemed to flank her like some sort of personal guard. I'd learned from overheard conversations they were called Muna and Uzma. And your families are in the Sultan's kennels, I suppose. I watched the insult dawn across all three of their faces at once. Ayet recovered fast.
You seem to think that we are your enemies, Ayet said. But we can help you. Do you know where we are?
She didn't wait for me to answer.
This is the very menagerie where the Sultan's wife, Nadira, met the genie who gave her a demon child.
Nadira was Ahmed and Dalila's mother. Everyone knew that story. One day, the Sultan's wife was wandering the gardens of the palace when she stumbled upon a frog that had accidentally leapt into one of the Sultan's bird cages and could not find his way out again. I glanced at the birds in the cage. The birds kept pecking at him. Nadira took pity on the creature and, opening the cage, reached in with no care for the way the birds pecked at her own hands, turning them bloody and scratched. As soon as she set the frog back down, he transformed into his true form, that of a genie.
See, here's the thing.
Ayet and her girls circled me like a pack of roving animals.
Girls who don't find their right place in the harem don't tend to last long. The Sultan likes Mirajin girls.
Ayet's hands slammed into my chest, surprisingly hard, knocking me back towards the nearest cage. One of the tigers glanced up, curious.
But he's only ever got room for three of us on display. So when someone new comes in, another one has to go. And none of us wants to disappear, which means you don't have a purpose here.
I've got no interest in your idiot husband. I wanted to shove her hand away, but I couldn't. The Sultan had given me orders. I couldn't fight back. Ayet wasn't convinced.
Do you know what else happened here? This is where the Sultan killed Nadira after she gave birth to an abomination.
She took a step towards me.
Because here, nobody can hear screams over the birds.
Sure enough, the birds in the cages were in chaos now, their voices drowning out the rest of the harem just spitting distance away.
Go ahead. Call out for help. You should leave her alone.
The voice wasn't strong. It was barely a squeak among the chorus of wild feathered birds, but it was loud enough to be heard. It was the girl with the toy elephant. She was watching this all play out from the opposite side of the cage. Her eyes were wide with fear, but she'd spoken up all the same. Ayet sneered, but a sharp-tongued insult never came.
This is our business, Layla. The Sultan hasn't taken a new wife in a decade, which means she's clearly here for our blessed husband, the Sultan, not your father. If you're so sure of that.
Layla got to her feet uncertainly, clutching the clay elephant like a child a dozen years younger.
I can just go ask my father.
Invoking the Sultan was like uttering a magic word, the kind that summoned powerful spirits and opened doors and cliff faces. All Layla had to do was mention him, and it was as if he were here. Ayet caved first. She rolled her eyes like she wanted me to think I wasn't worth her time and turned away.
Consider this a warning.
She tossed the words over her shoulder as she swanned out. I watched her go, hating her, hating that I couldn't break her nose like I wanted to. Across the menagerie, Layla was winding the mechanism in her hand absently.
You'll get used to them.
I didn't plan on having to get used to them. I was getting out of there before I had time to. Since arriving in the harem, I'd stayed in my rooms when I wasn't looking for a way out. The attendants brought me fresh clothes and a basin to wash in and meals, seeming to anticipate what I needed without me ever needing to speak a word. But that night, no food came. I couldn't help but think Ayet might have something to do with that. Just because she couldn't tear me apart like a wild animal didn't mean she was done trying to make me suffer for some imagined designs I had on her soul team. The last thing I needed was another prince in my life. I had a hard enough time with the two I'd already acquired. I waited until it was dark outside before finally giving in to my growling stomach. Even I wasn't stubborn enough to starve to death. Women were dotted all over the garden where the meal was served, sitting in tightly knotted clusters around dishes of food that they shared between them. So tightly knotted that it'd be impossible to untie one long enough to get to the food. I was suddenly back in my first night in the rebel camp, before I'd known everyone's name, when I'd been an intruder. Except I'd been an intruder with Shahzad and Bahi to guide me then. I spied Layla then, the only person I could see sitting by herself. She was almost done making the toy elephant, by the looks of things, and the mottled clay was taking shape around the articulated metal joints. As I watched her, she wound up a small key in the back of the toy. It marched with jolting, violent steps towards one of the small children sitting with the huddle of women nearest her. The little boy reached for it excitedly, but his mother snatched him away, pulling him onto her lap, knocking the thing over in the process. The moment of joy that had bloomed on Layla's face at operating the tiny thing disappeared as she ducked her head. A girl like that would be eaten alive in the desert. Then again, a girl from the desert could get eaten alive in the palace. I picked up the toy from where it was now lying uselessly on the ground, legs still jerking forward. I held it out to her. She looked up at me with eyes that seemed to take up her whole face. "You helped me today, in the menagerie." She just stared at me. I wanted to say that I could have handled myself, and that would have been true if I weren't trapped by 100 tiny pieces of metal under my skin. "Thank you." She nodded and took the toy. I sat down next to her without invitation. I didn't really have anywhere else to go. I was being nice to her because I was going to need allies in the harem. That was what I told myself. Not because she had big, lost eyes that made me think of Delilah's. Ayet and her two parasites were in a tight knot a little way off. Waves of disdain were rolling off them even from this far away. When they caught me looking back, Ayet whispered something to Muna. They descended into fits of giggles like crowing birds.
"They're afraid of you," Layla volunteered. "They think you'll take their place with Kadir."
I snorted. "Believe me, I have no interest in your brother." An attendant appeared, handing me a plate heavy with savory-smelling meats. My stomach growled in grateful answer.
"He's not my brother."
Layla's jaw set firmly.
"I mean, yes, I suppose. We're both children of my most exalted father, the Sultan. But in the harem, the only people we call brother or sister are those who share the same mother. I only have one brother, Rahim. He's gone from the harem now."
She sounded far away. "And your mother?" I asked.
"She was a Gamenix engineer's daughter." She turned the small toy over in her hands. "Jin had told me about that country.
It was where the twinned compasses he and Ahmed each always kept had been made. A country that had learned to meld magic and machines. This explained how she learned to make little mechanized toys. She vanished when I was 8 years old. Layla said it so calm and straightforward it caught me off guard. What do you mean, vanished? I asked.
Oh, it happens in the harem, Layla said. Women disappear when they lose their use. That's why Ayet is so afraid of you. She hasn't been able to conceive a child for the Sultim. If you replace her, she could vanish just like the others. It happens every day.
I took a bite of my food absently, listening to Layla talk. It hit my tongue like an ember, igniting my mouth. Tears sprang to my eyes as I spat the food in the grass, coughing violently.
Can't handle our fine food? Muna called from across the garden.
Next to her, Ayet and Uzma were doubled over in fits of giggles as Muna popped a piece of bread in her mouth, puckering her lips at me deliberately as she savored it.
A present from the blessed Sultima. Layla picked up something red from my plate. Her nose wrinkled. Suicide pepper, she said, tossing it into the nearest fire grate.
What in the hell is a suicide pepper? I was still coughing. Layla pressed a glass into my hands. I downed it, cooling the burning on my tongue.
It's a foreign spice. My father tries to keep it out of the harem, but it's...
She ran her tongue over her lips nervously.
Sometimes girls here use it to escape.
It took me a heartbeat to realize what she meant by escape.
Suicide pepper.
So some folk had found a way out. It wasn't the sort of escape I had planned, but if those peppers were coming in from the outside, there had to be a way to get things out, too. Some way for the whispers to make it through these walls.
Who is the blessed Sultima?
I had heard her mentioned already, when I first arrived, in the baths.
The Sultim's first wife.
Layla looked up, surprised.
Well, not the first that he took. He took Ayet as a wife the day after he won the Sultim trials. But the blessed Sultima is the only one of Kadir's wives who has been able to conceive a child.
They must hate her. My Aunt Farah had hated Nita, my uncle's youngest wife. But Farah's place as first wife had been secured by three sons. It was Nita who had to kiss her feet to get anything. They might be talking about the Sultim instead of a desert horse trader, but they were still just jealous wives. And I understood how these things worked. The first wife was the most powerful woman in the household, in this case, in the harem.
Where would one find the Sultima? Chapter 18. The Sultima was a legend in the harem, chosen by God to be the mother of the next heir of Miraji. The only woman worthy of conceiving a child by the Sultim. She kept herself locked in her rooms most of the time. Women in the harem whispered that it was because she was praying. But I remembered something Shahzad had told me once. If you could stay out of your enemy's line of sight, they'd always count your forces stronger than they were. And from the whispers I'd heard, the harem was full of the Sultima's enemies. But if there was one thing I knew about legends, it was that we were still flesh and blood. And flesh and blood had to come out of her rooms eventually. 2 days after Muna fed me the suicide pepper,
Layla woke me up with the news. The blessed Saltima had finally emerged to bathe. I spotted the Saltima before I'd even fully emerged from the hallway into the baths. She was sitting with her back to the entrance, dangling one leg in the water, with the other braced under her, twisted just enough towards me so that I could see the swell of her stomach. Her age singled her out. I'd seen other pregnant women in the harem, but they belonged to the Sultan. He'd stopped taking wives nearly 10 years back. His wives were nearer in age to him now. Most had seen at least 3 decades or close to it. Even from afar, I could tell the Saltima hadn't seen 18 years yet. She was running her hands over her middle over and over in soothing motions, head tilted forward in thought. From here, the blessed Saltima looked just like any other heavily pregnant desert girl. It wasn't so much that I'd expected her to go to the bath draped in pearls and rubies, but after all the rumors and whispers, I figured I'd get something more than a girl in a thin white culotte. She wasn't alone. At the other side of the water, Kadir was sprawled, wearing a loose shalwar and nothing else. He was bare from the waist up. I hadn't thought Jin shared anything with this brother, but the aversion to shirts seemed to be a family trait. There were about 6 other girls I recognized from the harem in the water, too. A collection of Kadir's wives, splashing around in the water, giggling, long white culottes sticking to them. I'd been here long enough to realize that most of the women in the harem weren't Mirajin. They were pale northern women stolen off ships, foreign-featured eastern girls sold as slaves, dark-skinned Amanpurian girls taken in border skirmishes. But there was no mistaking this girl for anything but desert-born, even from behind. The linen stuck against her body from the steam that curled up from the baths. Damp, dark hair clung to her face. She didn't exactly look like the all-powerful Saltima, the chosen vessel of the future Sultan of Miraji. And then she looked up, startled by the sound of my footsteps, eyes darting over her shoulder towards me, and my heart leapt into my mouth. Oh, damn every power in heaven and hell. What did I do to deserve this? I was face to face with the Saltima I'd heard so much about, the only woman pure enough to conceive a child by the Sultim Kadir, the girl sent by God to assure the future of Miraji. Only I knew her as my cousin Shira. And the only thing God had ever sent her to do was make my life a living hell. Jin told me once fate had a cruel sense of humor. I was starting to believe him. First Tamid, and now Shira. I'd crossed an entire desert, but it was like I'd been dragged back home to face everything I'd left in my dust when I ran. Shira looked as surprised as I was. Her mouth formed a small O before pressing tightly into a hard line. We stared at each other across the narrow stretch of tiles left between us. Our wills locked, the same way they'd done 100 times across the tiny bedroom in my aunt's house.
"Well," Shira said.
She'd lost her accent. I could hear it even in that one word. Or maybe not lost, smothered under something that passed for a northern accent.
"Paint me purple and call me a genie if it isn't my least favorite cousin." There was a retort on the tip of my tongue. I caught it from slipping out by the skin of my teeth. "The Sultan has a genie," I reminded myself. "He has a first being trapped at his will, and nothing is stopping him from using it against the rebels at any second. And then it could be over. For me. For Ahmed, Jin, Shahzad, and the whole rebellion." I didn't know much about other families, but I reckoned most of the time when you had to pretend to be nice to them, there weren't this many lives at stake. I thought you were dead, I said. You and Tamid both. Last time I'd seen Shira, she'd been on a train racing towards Isman with Prince Naguib, taken captive because they figured there was a chance she'd know where I was going. And if they found me, they found Jin, and if they found Jin, they found the rebellion. After Jin and I had gotten off the train, she lost her use. Noorsham had told me she'd been left in the palace to die. Only she wasn't just still alive, she was thriving. I wondered if she knew Tamid had survived being abandoned to fend for himself in this palace too. If she knew what he was doing for the Sultan. If she even cared. She never had. I shoved away thoughts of Tamid angrily. Shira was easier to face. It had never been that complicated between us. We hated each other. Old hate was easier to face than Tamid's new disdain.
You ought to know better than that.
My cousin smiled that seductive smile at me.
Us desert girls are survivors, although I'm curious about how you plan on surviving long here.
I stepped under the iridescent stones of the archway and into the harem baths proper. I ignored the tendrils of steam curling around my body like clinging fingers.
Last time I saw you, weren't you riding off with some rebel traitor? Traitors don't survive long here.
Her eyes darted across the baths pointedly towards where Kadir was lounging. The bathing hall was as wide across as the whole of Dustwalk, far enough that Kadir hadn't noticed me yet.
He picked something up from a pile at his elbow and tossed it in a high arc into the middle of the pool.
As it caught the light, I realized it was a ruby as big as my thumb. It hit the water with a careless splash. A chaos of screeches and giggles followed as the six girls in the water dove towards where the ruby had disappeared under the surface, splashing and piling over each other as Kadir watched them hungrily. The shrieking and the splashing covered our voices.
Now, what do you think my prince would make of your allegiance to his traitor brother if I told him?
My sudden fear must have been scrawled all over my face because Shira smiled like a cat who'd eaten a canary. God damn her. I'd come here for help, not to get sold out by her. Shira. I closed the last few steps between us from the entrance to the edge of the water, dropping down in a crouch next to her, lowering my voice.
If you tell Kadir I'm part of...
I caught the words back before I said them out loud.
What you know,
I said carefully, eyes darting towards a girl who just surfaced near us in the water.
I swear to God, Shira, if you breathe a word, I'll...
I scrambled for something to threaten her with. Just like the bargaining games we used to play in Dustwalk. She wouldn't tell her mother I'd been out all night with Tamid, and I wouldn't tell her father she'd been in the stables letting Fazim get his hands under her clothes. Only this wasn't Dustwalk anymore, and if she told on me, I'd get more than a switch to the back. I'd get myself and probably a few hundred other people killed. And then it slipped out. I'll just have to go ahead and tell him that kid of yours isn't his. Shira's whole face went still.
Oh, God. The truth of my own words hit me. The baby isn't the Sultim's. Keep your voice down, Shira hissed.
Across the baths, one of the girls surged out of the water with a scream of triumph, her fist fastened around the ruby, tight as a noose. She kicked her way to the edge of the pool, showing the red stone proudly to Kadir, who leaned down to steal a kiss from her. She dropped the ruby into a small pile of colorful jewels on the side of the baths, keeping it separate from the piles of the other girls. When they were done, the Sultim would set their prizes into a necklace and gift it to them.
It was like watching children play a game. Only the games in this harem could end with losing your head. The Sultan pulled another small yellow diamond from his dwindling pile.
What the hell were you thinking?
Infidelity meant death in the harem. Even I knew that. It had happened to Ahmed's mother when she gave birth to Delilah, and it had happened to other women, too. There were countless stories, too many to ignore. Men who slipped into the harem without permission, servants, princes who were not heirs. In every single tale, it cost everyone involved their lives. Shira was a lot of things, but stupid wasn't one of them.
I wanted to survive.
Shira's fingernails clicked dully against the tiles at the edge of the bath. I realized they'd been filed down low. She always used to keep them longer in Dustwalk.
You left me and to me to die in Dustwalk so you could stay alive.
She said Tamid's name different from how she used to back in Dustwalk. It didn't stick to the roof of her mouth with disdain. I supposed whatever they'd gone through together was the sort of thing that was bound to turn you into allies.
Is Tamid the one who...
I started, already dreading the answer.
Don't be ridiculous, Shira snapped. I wouldn't risk giving the Sultan a cripple for a son.
And you really wonder why I think you're awful? I clenched my fists, fighting the old urge to defend Tamid. He wouldn't fight for me. I wondered if she was why he loathed me now. Had she infected him with her hatred of me on the journey? Or had I made him hate me all on my own?
Is what I did to survive any worse than what you did?
She moved her foot in slow circles through the water, sending out ripples.
Nagib abandoned me here after I was no good to him anymore. I would have died if I hadn't proved myself more interesting than the other girls in the harem.
A new chorus of shrieking emerged from the gaggle of girls as another jewel sailed into the water.
But even being the Sultan's favorite will only keep you alive here so long. So I've done the only thing I could that really ensured my survival.
She ran her hands along her swollen stomach, her jaw working.
And you can tell whoever you want. No one will believe you.
Good God, she was not making this easy. It had been a long time since we'd last bickered in Dustwalk. I'd faced a whole lot of folk worse than her. But she was making me feel like we were right back under her mother's roof, and there was nothing I wanted more than to best her just once.
Yes, they will, Shira.
If she wasn't going to flinch, neither was I. Because if I knew one thing for sure, it was that if anyone found out Shira was carrying some other man's child and pretending it was the Sultan's, she'd lose her head. I held her life in my hands, just the same as she did mine.
And I reckon you know that.
Shira stared me down.
Being Saltima suited her,
even I had to admit it. There was weight in those eyes that'd make most folks want to drop their gaze first. But I'd grown up shooting. I could outlast her.
Fine. It's a deal.
Sure enough, Shira blinked first.
I won't tell on you if you won't tell on me.
You're going to have to do me one better than that, cousin.
You want something else?
She scoffed, still running her hands across her stomach over and over. She had a whole lot of power here, but she didn't have any over me. Finally, she pursed her lips as if the words she was about to spit out tasted bitter.
Of course you do.
Fine. Then Shira tossed her head back and laughed like I'd just said the funniest thing in the world. For a second, I thought she'd lost her mind. Her voice echoed around the tiled walls, carrying over the commotion in the water and making Kadir look up. And he saw me.
Damn it,
Shira gave me a satisfied smirk.
Better talk fast, cousin. I'm guessing you're the new toy Kadir keeps talking about, the one he's not allowed to have. So you have until he gets here to play with you to spit out what you want.
I really wanted to push her into the water.
Rumor has it you've got a way to pass contraband in and out of the harem.
Who says that?
People, I evaded. Do you or don't you?
I kept one eye on Kadir as he got to his feet, sauntering lazily around the iridescent blue tiles of the pool toward us. It was like being tracked by a hungry skinwalker. I wanted to get out before he got to me.
I might, she said, hedging,
wasting time.
What is it you're so desperate to get in that you'd threaten my life for it? A bottle of liquor? New clothes? That certainly seems worth the price of my head.
It wasn't a half-bad attempt to make me feel sorry about blackmailing her. Anyone else, and I might have actually been sorry.
I don't want anything brought in.
I kept an eye on Kadir, getting closer now.
I need to get a message out. Can you do that?
I suppose so. Shira ran her tongue over her teeth, deliberately slowly. She was trying to keep me here.
I'd need some time. I don't have a whole lot of that. Can you help me? Or do I tell your husband that you climbed into another man's bed and get you hanged?
He was halfway across to us now.
I can help.
Shira set her jaw angrily, resting her hand on her middle.
If you...
Come to join the game? Kadir called, interrupting whatever Shira had been about to say next. He was close enough to be heard. His eyes traveled up and down my body. You're a little overdressed.
I pushed myself to my feet.
Shazad had taught me enough to know that you didn't stand against an enemy from lower ground.
I'm dressed just fine for leaving, Your Exalted Highness.
Kadir made a noise at the back of his throat, like a hum of agreement. Except it sounded an awful lot like a laugh.
You are free to leave, of course. He was rolling a perfect white pearl between his thumb and forefinger.
He circled around in front of me, standing between me and the way out. Then he tossed the pearl carelessly aside, letting it land in the water. The girls who'd been watching the exchange didn't scramble for it.
As soon as you bring me back that pearl.
I can't swim, I said.
Anywhere else I'd be able to stand up for myself. I'd be able to fight him. But I was helpless. I tried to hold myself like I wasn't.
Then you can't leave, he smirked. That pearl is very precious to me.
I couldn't fight him. Just the thought of raising my fist and putting it in his too pleased with himself looking face made the tug of the Sultan's orders twinge in my stomach. And I wasn't sure what he'd try to do if I walked out, what he could do, or whether the Sultan had warned him against hurting me. If the Sultan cared whether his Demji prize got hurt. I didn't even know why I was still alive. He had his genie. The silence was broken by a splash as one of the other girls dove under the water and sprang back up a moment later, the pearl between her fingers.
I got bored waiting, she said, pouting prettily, her pale hair sticking to her forehead as she brandished the pearl. But there was a tightness to her smile, and I understood what she'd done. For me, the risk.
The tension broke as Kadir lounged over to her. Shira was on her feet, grabbing me by the elbow, pushing me out of the baths.
Tonight. She shoved me back towards the safety of the gardens. Meet me by the weeping wall after dark.
Chapter 19. The Weeping Wall was the easternmost wall of the harem, a small, closed-off part of the garden dominated by the biggest tree I'd ever seen in my life. It would have taken three of me to get my arms all the way around it, and the branches stretched so far they touched the top of the walls on either side. According to the women of the harem, it was the place where Saltima Sabria had waited for Sultim Aziz 1,000 years ago. He had gone to war on the distant eastern border and left his love in the harem. The Weeping Wall was the closest she had been able to get to him while he was away in battle. She stood there every day waiting for him, her tears watering the tree so that it grew higher and higher every day. Until one day, it was finally high enough for her to climb to see over the walls of the harem to where her husband's army was. That day, the other women found her on the ground, screaming and wailing and clawing at the wall. She couldn't be consoled, and she cried until her voice left her, and the tree grew greater still. 3 days later, the news came that Aziz had been killed in battle. That was what Sabria had seen from the top of the tree, across the walls, across deserts and cities and seas. The wall looked just like every other in the harem in the dim light of my oil lamp. Ivy blooming with flowers, all the color of the setting sun climbed from the earth up the stone wall, trying to hide the fact that we were in a prison. I pushed the ivy aside, setting my hands against the solid stone. My fingers met an uneven surface. When I held the lamp up, I realized it looked like a gouge, several of them. The kind fingernails might leave. And her wailing carried on for 7 nights and 7 days. I jumped at Shira's voice behind me. She was draped in a dark blue khalat that made her melt in with the shadows. Until the Sultan could listen to her grief no more, and he strung her up where only the stars could hear her wail. I dropped my hand. Who knew such love could exist in the harem? Shira didn't miss the sarcasm in my voice. Anyone less self-centered than you? I was about to retort that she didn't love Kadir no more than she'd love Nagib. But then I realized that her hands had drifted to her pregnant stomach as she spoke. Folk did terrifying things for the ones they loved. That I'd learned from stories. I even had a bullet wound scar across my hip from Ilyaz to prove it. So what now? I raised an eyebrow at her expectantly. A trick I'd learned from Jin.
Oh, now we wait, cousin.
Shira leaned against the huge tree, tilting her head back. I was going to have to play along with Shira's game. I flopped against the tree next to her. How long? Shira tipped her head back further.
It could be a while. Can't tell. It's hard to see the sky properly from the city.
I leaned my head back against the trunk, my hair snagging in the rough bark. She wasn't wrong. Through the crisscrossing branches of the huge tree, I could see the dark sky. But with the lights from the palace and the city, I couldn't make out the stars.
So,
Shira broke the silence after a moment.
Are you really with the rebel prince?
She was fiddling with something, and I realized it was a rope that ran the length of the tree, like a pulley. She was tugging it absently up and down. At the top, above the line of the harem walls, a piece of cloth stirred in the wind.
I really am.
She was signaling someone. It could be a trap, for all I knew. I couldn't do much about it if it was, except face it when it came.
Who would have thought it?
Shira smiled.
Two girls from Dustwalk with royalty. What was it the Holy Father used to say?
Her accent was slipping. I wondered if she noticed.
Men who worship at the feet of power either rise with it
or get trampled, I said, filling in the saying.
Good thing we aren't men, then.
I didn't know why I was buying into her game, but I was real low on people I could talk to in this palace. Layla was sweet enough, but she was still the Sultan's daughter. And to me, it wasn't worth thinking about. He might be alive, but my friend had still died in the sand and dust walk.
Jira's dark eyes met my pale ones. A moment of recognition passed between us.
We'd both hitched our wagons to powerful folk, just on different sides. If that was the choice, to rise or be flattened, chances were one of us was going to wind up rising and the other one dead.
Shira, I started.
I wasn't sure how I was going to finish.
I never did, because a man stepped out of the weeping wall.
I'd seen a whole lot of Demji do impossible things, but I'd be lying if I said I'd been expecting that. The man was flesh and blood, and though at first glance he was dressed in desert clothes, he was distinctly un-Mirajin. He had hair the color of sand, held back by a shima that looked like it had been tied by someone with no hands, and pale skin that glowed in the lamplight. And his eyes were nearly as blue as mine. For a second, I thought he was a Demji.
Blessed Sultima, he said,
his voice low and tinged with an accent. Not a Demji, then, just a foreigner. He pulled himself to his full height, giving me a better view of him. Dark, polished boots, different from anything I'd ever seen in the desert, rose to his knees. His loose desert trouser legs stuffed inside, and he wore a white shirt open at the collar. I got the strangest impression he was pausing for effect. After a beat, he stepped forward dramatically. That was when his arm got stuck in one of the vines that hung from the wall. It sort of ruined the effect. He recovered as well as he could, untangling his arm. Then he plucked one of the flowers from the vine and offered it to Shira with an extravagant bow.
Your beauty grows with every passing day.
His badly tied shima flopped open, falling off his face so I could see him clearly. He wasn't a whole lot older than we were, and a light constellation of freckles over his pale nose made him look even younger. He was northern, but not Galen. His words sounded wrong, and I'd seen enough of the Galen to know he wasn't one of them. He straightened and flung the shima over his shoulder like the sweep of a cloak. Shira took the flower and pressed it to her nose. So this was how Shira smuggled things into the harem. And judging by the look he was giving her, this was how she'd managed to get herself pregnant, too. Finally, the foreign man seemed to notice me.
This is...
Shira started, but I didn't let her finish.
Allow me to introduce myself.
He snatched up my right hand without asking. I resisted the urge to yank it out of his grip. Shahzad would call that undiplomatic.
Especially to such a beautiful young woman.
He raised my hand to his lips in some strange foreign gesture and kissed it.
I, he declared, straightening dramatically, am the blue-eyed bandit.
I choked on a snort that got stuck in my throat and turned into an uncontrollable cough. Shira patted me awkwardly on the back as I doubled over, bracing my free hand against my knees.
Yes, I know. My reputation precedes me.
My reputation precedes you. But I still couldn't talk through my coughing.
Don't let it intimidate you. I didn't really defeat 1,000 soldiers in Fahali.
He leaned forward conspiratorially, still clutching my hand, now twining his fingers through mine.
It was merely hundreds.
Is that right? I'd finally managed to catch my breath. I remembered Fahali like a blur,
gunpowder and blood and sand, and myself in the middle of it. So tell me, how did you flood the prayer house at Malal?
Well, there was a glint in his eye.